Savvy regards to the staff of Nemata. This is yours, truthfully. I try. Recording on in the early hours of April 12th, 2020. So this would be Easter morning, according to the Christian calendar. And day 19 of the second Swandeva shift, according to Marita's calendar. Sitting here through a little bout of insomnia, not really feeling tired or sleepy. So I thought I might take the occasion impromptu to share some of my thoughts and perceptions about the event that's currently unfolding. I've been saying recently to people in physical proximity that I never anticipated that I would live to see correction occur in the world drama at large. So it comes as rather a surprise to me. I can't exactly call it a pleasant shock, but I am confident that the horrific event that's unfolding right now is the occasion for that shift that would be truly an unparalleled crossover for humanity on the planetary scale. And of course, you're all wondering what you can do about it, aren't you? You're wondering, what is your role in correction at this moment in relation to this event? Maybe I'll get around to that. After I present my view of what's happening and how it may unfold. In the first place, I'll state the obvious, which is this event is without doubt the cruelest act that has ever been perpetrated on this planet. It is the cruelest hoax that has ever been implemented for attacking all of the nations, all of the races. And there are moments in the day when I have to stop and steady myself. I almost feel as if my body moves a little, being hit by the impact and the magnitude of what's taking place here. It is really the end game of the archonic parasites. And it's only in their end game that she could and would be able to effectuate her correction in the collective. And what can we do about it? And what is our role in supporting the Divine Mother in this momentous task? Well, in the first place, it's imperative to make this clarification. And I advise you all to hold firmly to this clarification. The responsibility for achieving correction in the grand scale with the masses is totally her responsibility. Always go back to the design of the two loops of the strange attractor. On the left side is the small loop, and the seed point in that loop is the Gnostic truth core, or the ground force, as I'm now calling us, the ground force. Her witnesses and allies are the force on the ground, on the battlefield. The right loop are the masses and those who know nothing and may never know anything about all the things that you know. So it is a diorthosis. It is a two-way solution. Part of the solution rests with the ground force, and part of the solution rests with the collective mass of humanity, with the races. Always remember the serenity prayer. Goddess, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. That would be what happens in the large group. The courage to change the things I can. That's what happens in the seed group, in the small loop, and the wisdom, and there's her name, to know the difference. I hold on to that every day. If you're shaken, physically shaken, like I am, don't be surprised. It's natural, the impact of this event is enormous, and its magnitude touches everyone. There's never been an event like this. There's never been. The Zenosh have never deployed their plan in this manner before. So without rambling too much or dragging out my words, let me see if I can give you the highlights of my view of what's happening. In the first place, I find it really remarkable that they have succeeded in implanting something in the collective mind without ever actually openly stating it. Now, I was thinking today as I was taking a walk that this is a Mephisto rule. The danger that is implied is more powerful and more dangerous than the one that is openly stated. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I have not yet heard anywhere in any of the discourse about this event, I have not heard two things openly and flatly stated. First, I have not heard it stated that the CV-19 virus is extremely and exceptionally contagious. I have not heard that exact language. Second, I have not heard it stated by anyone on any side of the discussion about this event that this alleged virus has the ability to strike down people in a violent manner, so that, for instance, someone would be immediately seized by horrific symptoms, namely shortness of breath, and they would die convulsively due to some kind of respiratory seizure, which could well provoke other seizures like a heart attack. I have not actually heard the authorities who are pushing this hoax say that about the monster microbe. But it looks like many TADs widely regard that to be so. Now, there is no evidence of either of those claims, none whatsoever. But somehow, the authorities have been able to subconsciously plant in the collective mind, in the exopsyche, those two particular features in the profile of this alleged virus. Even at the beginning, when most of the news was coming from China regarding what was portrayed as an horrific situation in Wuhan, even then, I didn't hear those two points explicitly stated. It was implied. And according to Mephisto rules, a danger or threat implied is more powerful than one which is openly stated. So, having somehow implanted those two concepts describing the phantom virus in the exopsyche, the next move, the next tactic was to say, these are the measures that must be taken considering the specific nature of this threat. And almost immediately, really, in the blink of an eye, the authorities came out stating the precautionary measures, quote, what needs to be done to prevent the spread of the virus, end quote. And almost instantaneously implementing those measures. You know, lockdown is a word that refers to prisons. The authorities running a prison have a riot situation, or they believe that it's likely that the inmates will riot, then they lock down the prison. So the implication that you are already in a prison is again contained in the word lockdown. Do you see how nefarious that is, how insidiously clever it is? If you accept the lockdown, then basically you are saying, I accept the fact that my state of existence is one of a prisoner. You lock down prisoners. So, consequently, with lightning speed, these measures were imposed. Another implication that was used, a Mephisto rule, goes like this. Well, the measures being taken are advisory. So you're advised to self-isolate and to distance yourself from other people and to wear masks and to do all these things. You're advised to do that, but in fact, you're not being advised to do that. You're being ordered to do that. So again, the advisory message does not contain the outright statement, we order you to do so, but it has the same effect, and so people comply with the order. And there appears to be massive compliance. But one thing I want to warn you about is anything you hear about this event and how people are reacting around the world is mostly untrue. Another implication is that everyone is complying with the advisory, which in fact is an unstated threat. And that is simply not true. Everyone in every country around the world, in every town and city of those countries, is not in compliance No. But there was no way to know unless you have direct knowledge, person to person, unless you have the eyewitness testimony of someone you know, there is no way to know what is actually going on. How many states in the United States of America are locked down in such a manner that the people in those states, in every county and town and city, are in compliance? It's impossible to know, but I assure you that it is not complete compliance. And there are some places where, if you believe the news, those measures are not being imposed and the populations are not complying. And there are greater and lesser degrees of compliance. Also, there must be, every moment of every day, countless acts of non-compliance. But you're not going to hear about them unless you perform one of those acts or unless you have direct personal knowledge of one of those acts. It's only a month ago, on March 9th, a little over a month ago, that I flew out of Brussels to Spain. And I didn't do it in a state of panic, and I didn't make the flight arrangements under any unusual conditions. I booked the flight when everything was more or less normal. I identify the day, a few days later, Friday the 13th of March, to be the moment when it suddenly became clear what was happening. So I didn't come here in a state of panic, nor in a state of duress, nor worrying about whether I could get here or not, nor even thinking or worrying about if I could ever get back to see my best friend. So I reflected a lot as soon as I was back here on the astonishing rapidity in which these extreme measures undertaken on a fraudulent pretext were accomplished. And one of the first insights that I had about this whole event is that it's been in preparation for a very, very long time. You know, there's two terms that you learn when you study what happened in the Soviet Union, which is, I would say, an exact historical parallel to what's happening now. How the Soviet state was created, the actual measures taken to impose the Soviet system, and the propaganda that went along, the brainwashing, the mind control that went along with those measures. There are two terms that come up when you make an historical study of that event, particularly from the viewpoint of historical revision. One of them is dispatches. A dispatch is a report sent, say, from a war zone to a command and control center not in the war zone. And sometimes then those at the command and control center who receive a dispatch describing the conditions on the front line write a corresponding dispatch going out from command and control, which gives their version of what they're being told through dispatches coming from the front line. Historical revisionists have shown that the Supreme Soviet in Moscow, the headquarters of the Bolshevik Party, fabricated thousands and thousands of false dispatches. They pretended that these dispatches that they sent out to the world and to their forces who were battling for their plan were complete lies. And through those lies, they fabricated a false narrative about the war, the Germans, the cause of the war, the atrocities committed by the Germans, and so forth. So the mainstream media today is sending out these dispatches about the CV-19 pandemic. And these dispatches are all fabricated. And the purpose of them is to generate fear. Second term you learn is, what is the term? Begins with the D, directives. Directives are a combination of policy or protocol and program. So, for instance, policy is that a government will close its schools. So the governor of a certain state in the United States or a certain area of a country in Europe or the head of that country receives a directive from the Supreme Soviet. And it's the same Supreme Soviet operating today that operated during the Bolshevik takedown of Tsarist Russia. And as I said, the directives consist of a policy or protocol explaining why they're doing something and the program that is to be implemented, and it's an order. So the directive is an order. Well, what I realized within a few days of getting back here, well, I asked myself this question. How could these actions, these extreme measures, be taken so rapidly all over the place? And it became obvious to me in a kind of racing ideation, although I stayed as sober as I could, became obvious to me that all of those directives were already written. All of the protocols and policies to be released, the beginning and middle and later stages of this event, have already been written. So I had an hallucination of a massive room, like a war room where Pentagon generals sit. You know, picture the war room in Dr. Strangelove. And in that room are the commanders of the PSYOP, and they have everything computerized. For instance, they have the name, the photograph, the record, the telephone number, the email of a sheriff in Wisconsin. And they have that information for all the sheriffs in Wisconsin and all the heads of school boards and all the heads of hospitals and even particular people in those hospitals whom they have tagged to be agents of their plan. And they've already done all the work. All they have to do, basically, is scroll and click. To make an event happen, all they have to do is pull out a name out of their database and say, we're going to implement a directive in Baton Rouge, Alabama. Or we're going to implement some event of provocation in Sacramento, California, or in Hamburg, Germany, or Hanover. And it just goes, and they have all of that information already. And they have gamed this whole event out to its ultimate goal, which is mandatory universal vaccination and the destruction of work and the impoverishment of the masses and the middle class. And they have gamed it and simulated it over and over again, thousands of times. I truly believe that. That's the only way that I can figure to explain how they would be able to implement this plan with such lightning fast rapidity. They have already played through and rehearsed every contingency, every minute detail, every possible threat to their plan. They have gamed it out to see how they can turn it to their advantage. And they are micromanaging it on a colossal scale. Of course, the primary nefarious tactic of the PSYOP is to get compliance. You see? You might recall from 9/11 coming forward that there were many independent investigators on the internet who showed that so-called terrorist attacks, for instance, were staged and they didn't really happen, as the narrative led the world to think they happened. Sandy Hook, for example, false flag attacks. And they have a long record of doing this, going all the way back, even before the beginning of the 20th century. So they've had a lot of practice in staging these events. This one is really different. This one is their master stroke. In cases like the Boston Marathon bombing or Sandy Hook, independent investigators were able to expose the fact that those events were staged and that they used what was called crisis actors. If you remember that. Well, what they've done now is exponentially more brilliant than that. They are executing a PSYOP in which the public at large volunteer to be the crisis actors in the event that is calculated to destroy their lives permanently and drive them into a world from which they cannot escape. And that is absolutely brilliant, I have to say. That is clear evidence of the mastery of Mephisto, who is the archontic trickster. And it is proof of the ultimate finesse of the archontic mind, which is an exobiological alien parasitic intelligence. And the entire world is now under assault of this intelligence, moving toward a final and lethal solution. Now, that doesn't mean that everyone in the world and every country, be it Brazil, be it Jamaica, or every town, for instance, as the towns in the Scottish islands of the Hebrides that I visited, doesn't mean that every single place in the world is responding and volunteering. The people in those places are volunteering to be crisis actors playing out a drama with the intention of their destruction. No, they want you to think that it's effective everywhere, but it is not effective everywhere. But it is effective in those places where they have focused their tactics, you see. And of course, the mainstream media and the propaganda that goes along, propaganda in the dispatches, remember, propaganda tells you that the lockdown it's not everywhere on the planet. You know, it's not in Taiwan. It's not in Singapore. I hear that it's not in Arkansas. I hear that it's not in Sweden, at least not to the degree that it appears to be in effect in some places. So, of course, they can only release a finite amount of material, finite amount of fake news in their dispatches. But they calculate all that so that the small examples that they give and the few examples that they give will convince people that their program is in effect everywhere. And it isn't. Always bear that in mind. Don't fall for that lie, because that lie is one of the main instruments of fear. Just just suggested that you picture the war room in Dr. Strangelove. Well, the war room in this case is most certainly an extremely large building in a particular country. That's the command and control center. And then in other countries around the world and in different places in Europe and the United States, they have the substations of the Central Soviet, the Supreme Soviet Command and Control. And they are fantastically and meticulously coordinated. The other analogy that I picture that comes to my mind, the other hallucination that I conjure up to picture what's happening, is the scene in The Wizard of Oz, the old man behind the curtain. But just imagine if you pull away that curtain, you don't just have a few dials and levers and some kind of hokey machine that he's using to make, to drive the Jehovah image of the wrathful God. I imagine something like a huge control panel with dials and levers and buttons on it. And the central dial of the control panel, let's imagine it's a very big dial, you know, say it's 3 feet across. It's a huge dial, and it has many fine calibrations on it. And this is the fear dial. And so at command and control, they fidget continually with the fear dial, and consistent with their grand and inclusive plan, they sometimes churn up the fear, and then sometimes they let it off, and then they turn it up again. And every time that they turn it up, they release a new barrage of dispatches, lying, the lying narrative, and they release a new batch of directives, protocols, and plans to be implemented through their various enablers who are at the different levels of government, the media, education, the hospitals, and so forth. So what I want to tell you is how I see the hand on that dial and what I see it doing. So basically, in the course of the year 2020, I see the hand turning the dial, imagine rotating it clockwise toward maximum fear. Also, suppose that there's that master dial, and then off to the left of it, let's say there are six other smaller dials, and they work these dials together. So let's call them, number them 1 through 6. So when they turn up the fear dial, then they also go turn up the number 1 dial, or the number 2 dial, or the number 3 dial. And those dials feed into the mix of the psyop the particular causes of fear that they want to implement at any particular time. So, of course, dial number 1 is going to be the phantom virus. So they tweak the main dial, turn it way, way up into high fear, and then they simultaneously turn dial number 1, releasing that particular weapon of fear, the weaponized fear that comes in the narrative of the virus. So what I see them doing is operating in the course of this year in 3 stages. We're in the first stage right now, and that's maximum fear using the narrative of the virus, fear of an invisible, horrific microbial agent that is exceptionally contagious and causes and will cause people to die in many, many ways. For For instance, it will cause some people who already have medical problems like pneumonia, asthma, emphysema, it will cause them to die. It will take them down, so the narrative says. But eventually, consistent with that scenario I discussed earlier, it will, according to their plan, they wish, according to their plan, they intend that it would take down people and drop them like flies in the street. And fear can do that. Fear can take your breath away. You can kill people with fear. So the first parameter of fear they employ is the fear of the virus itself, and the virus doesn't exist. But the fear of the virus is enough to create symptoms consistent with how they describe it. Mephisto rules. Now, precisely because they are using the narrative of a virus, the metaphor of a virus, they have insinuated in the collective mind, in the exopsyche, the notion that even though this CV-19 is an exceptional virus, it's different, it's novel, there's a chance that it will behave like viruses behave, like flu, influenza, in the flu season. So what typically happens and what people expect is that this virus is going to behave in that way, and that is to say, the cases will peak, the fatalities which are invented and falsely reported will peak, and then coming out of the flu season right now in April and May with the warmer weather, it will diminish, and additionally, the measures taken to treat people and prevent the spread of the disease will result in a decline, and so they wind back the master dial of fear. They just wind it back. When they escalate fear and when they alleviate fear, they are doing the same thing. Both of those actions have the same goal. Both of those actions have the same MO. So let's say that they alleviate the fear after Easter. I think it's very significant of the timing of this event, extremely significant. They've played it out, they've gamed it extensively. So Easter will be a turning point. And after Easter, going into April and then into May, they'll roll back the fear dial to create the illusion that the situation is easing up. Reality of it is, their intention to achieve their ultimate goal requires that they never, ever really allow it to ease up. So if the fear appears to be alleviated, and they announce that through their dispatches, and they give hope, and they lead people on deceptively, then they create the basis for another attack, ramping up the fear in another way, and this time turning another dial. So what are the other dials that they can turn? What are the other weapons of fear that they can use? Well, I'm sure it's raced through your mind. It's raced through everybody's mind, let's face it. Here's an example. Well, we're in isolation, but we still have the internet. And we can Skype and we can email and we can listen to the people on the internet who are exposing the hoax and so forth. Great. So they amp up the fear by sending out dispatches that say, oh no, because of the conditions that have been taken to fight this virus, the internet is overloaded, so we're going to restrict use of the internet. And at first, there's a gradual or selective restriction. But then you can see, once they introduce that false notion, once they play on that fear, then they're going to go to the end game with that fear, and the end game is that they will seek to completely limit and restrict the internet. For instance, they could say there's not enough bandwidth, there's too much activity due to the people being isolated and people working from home, and this will not hold, and we have to limit bandwidth on the internet to medical and military and policing activities, you see? That's, say, dial number two, the internet. Take the internet away. That creates fear. The next one is cash. Well, still allowing cash to be used. You can go to a cash machine. You can get money, even though they have released dispatches which inform the public that transactions hand-to-hand with paper money spread the virus. So they turn up the fear again, and they turn dial number three now, and that is cash supply. Oh, to avoid an economic disaster, we're going to have to limit cash withdrawals, and of course that again is simply a stealth move with the eventual aim to completely cut off all access to cash. Let's say, go to another small dial, and they turn up the fear dial again, and they fidget with the small dial. What would that be? Well, they've already leaking dispatches that are proposing that animals may carry the virus. So the directives proceeding consistent with that lie will say special measures have to be taken for your domestic animals, and it might be necessary for the authorities to come around and collect your animals. Now, how's that for a fear? And there's one more that I'm overlooking. Well, fear of travel, of course. They're already implementing that. That's part of the first dial, is the lockdown to prevent the spread of the virus. Therefore, no travel. Well, first of all, very restricted travel. And then ultimately, well, no travel at all, except through special authorization, or ultimately when they come up with a solution to the hoax they're perpetrating. Everyone's vaccinated, you have your papers, and then you can travel, but still under extreme restrictions and extreme surveillance. Now, I'm not saying that they are going to do all this. I'm not saying that they will succeed, either wholesale or in particular measures. I'm not saying anything. I'm not using the future tense. I'm telling you what I see they plan to do, and what they intend to do. So I expect that they would dial back on the fear factor for a while, say 6 weeks, through April and through the end of May. And then when you get down to the end of May, the beginning of June, they need another event. They need another pretext additional to the virus in order to double down on their measures of control. Now, I can't say what that will be, but I wouldn't be surprised by anything. One thought that crossed my mind was that they might say, well, we've done so well handling this virus, and we've been beating it, but now comes the bad news. We've heard that some terrorist organization has gotten their hands on the formula for the COVID-19 microbe, and that they are weaponizing it, and they intend to use it and spread it and use it as a bioweapon. Of course, some people are already speculating whether it's a bioweapon or not. It isn't a bioweapon. You are the bioweapon. You, a human animal walking on this planet, are the weaponized virus. You are suspect to be the weaponized virus. Just like after 9/11, everyone was suspected to be a terrorist. Well, now you are suspected to be a bioterrorist by the fact that you breathe, by the very fact that you live. You are a bioterrorist at the worst, or at the very least, you are a threat to public safety if you do not follow the measures they prescribe, because you could infect others, and you are a health hazard. And if you say anything against the narrative of the virus, questioning whether it is true, questioning the statistics, questioning the reliability of the test, anything at all, then you are in virus denial, and virus denial is coming, like Holocaust denial. So they established a precedent with Holocaust denial, and all they have to do now is transfer that precedent to virus denial. And they certainly plan to do that. You can count on it. So I expect that just at the beginning of summer, end of May, beginning of June, when the unsuspecting dupes around the world might be anticipating a relief, might be anticipating more freedom, like going to the beach or sitting in a restaurant or taking the family out in the car, that they plan to hit and double down with another assault. I don't believe that they can sustain their program of complete oppression and control and deception using the pretext of the virus alone. There's a lot of pushback against the virus, and there's a lot being said coming from many people that destroys their narrative. So it's my view that they would need, for their ultimate goal, a second event of some kind. And they would implement that during the summer, just at the very time when people thought that they were getting a break. See, they play on people's expectations. They build up false hope. They dial back on the fear, let people breathe easy for a while, wait and see how people behave. They check all their systems, see where the trouble spots are. And then when the right moment comes, they dial it up again, and they need a second pretext. And then they would put extreme measures and additional measures into play through the summer, and that would be absolutely horrendous. The effect that would have on those who were expecting to have a break and expecting in some manner or some degree to go back to life as normal or some form of normal are bound to be devastated when they find out that's not the case. And of course, that's exactly the MO of the PSYOP. So then through the summer, they continue to enforce these measures. And once again, we get into the fall season, get into September. And of course, in the United States, this goes into October and November and the elections. And it's anyone's guess what's going to happen at that moment, or even if the elections will even occur. But around the time preceding the elections in the United States of America, probably in October, late October, their plan requires a third impact. And the third impact would really be, according to their plan, the final blow to bring the world absolutely to its knees. I don't know what that would be, and I'm not predicting. And I'm not saying that they will implement a third assault of fear to escalate and secure their PSYOP. But I'm saying that it's quite likely that the event unfolds in this way. I'm very, very careful. Notice, I told you to watch your language, and I'm watching mine. I make a great effort not to say they will do this. Say they plan to do this. And they have it all set up to do this. But I don't say they are going to do this. And I implore you to be extremely careful with your own language in that respect. Whether or not they implement this extremely evil and horrendously cruel PSYOP along those lines remains to be seen. Just presenting you that outline, which I reflect on continually. And if it's helpful to you, then great. As regards their end game and the objective, that's clear to many, many people. That's clear to many, many TADs on different sides of this argument. And that is universal mandatory vaccination. And only Mephisto knows what's in those vaccines. Complete demolition and leveling of the economy so that people around the world are reduced to the Soviet lifestyle in which everyone is equal, everyone is equally impoverished, equally fearful, equally miserable, equally deprived of the simple and basic activities, I don't say freedoms, activities that make life what it is. Gathering together, social associations, groups, gatherings, working together, the dignity of working for a living. Their plan is to demolish all of that and to demolish money and to implement the kind of credit system that China is known for. I would just add here a little comment. I've provided the theme of the Righteous Third Party, and I've often illustrated that theme. And I can tell you right now that that theme is more useful and instructive than it ever has been. See, people who see what's happening, even intelligent and perceptive people, get confused because they can't see. They can see the possibility of this event bringing down China, destroying the communist CCP, Chinese Communist Party. At the same time, they can see it destroying the capitalist economy in the United States. And they're confused. They're in cognitive dissonance. But when you see the Righteous Third Party, the Supreme Soviet, well, you realize it doesn't matter to them. They'll destroy the Communist Party if it has served its purpose for them. And they will destroy American or Western democratic style capitalism if it has served its purpose for them. And I think it's pretty clear that both those systems, to the degree that they are manipulated by the Zenosh, have served their purpose. So the Righteous Third Party stands outside of both those systems, and it is prepared to take down both those systems for its ultimate goal. So, having said all that, the question is, what do you do about it? What do the witnesses and allies of the Aeon Sophia do? How can we help her? What is our specific role? What particularly does she need from the ground force? Now, Let's spin the metaphor around and convert it to our situation. The Aeon Sophia, the living intelligence of the earth, is the command and control center of all life on earth, and she's also the command and control center and central agency of correction. We're the ground force on the front line of the battle. Part of our responsibility is to convey to Sophianic command and control what we see, what we observe on the front line. Part of our responsibility is to figure out, and I haven't figured this out yet, what specifically she would need to know so that we could provide her with something to implement her correction. She's implementing her correction in the collective, and there's nothing you can do about that. That is beyond the scale of human comprehension. I don't exactly consider it to be an act of faith, what I just said, but it is, in a way, an act of faith based on knowledge and evidence. It's an act of trust. I trust that she's doing what she can do in her dimension to bring about the breakthrough in the collective. The breakthrough has to come from the collective for correction to work on the planetary scale. That's obvious, isn't it? So she's handling that, but what is it about our position? What is it about the territory we hold on the front line and what we see and observe? What is it about all that that we can transmit to her or bring to her attention, which would be to the advantage of correction? What is it? Well, honestly, I don't know. And I don't think it's something that can be preconceived intellectually in advance. I think the key to our role in implementing her correction can only be realized in the moment, when the moment comes to enact it. It's very scary. It's very suspenseful. But I'm pretty confident in saying that it can't be known in advance. In advance can only be known in the split-second moment of action. Now, this is a huge challenge. First of all, it's a challenge to live in the present, free of fear, and to be extremely vigilant. You know, I was in the Boy Scouts, and I reached, I was at the Star, Life, and Eagle are the three highest grades of the Scouts, so I reached the level of Star, significantly, and that's a lovely trope, with all my merit badges. And the motto of the Boy Scouts is be prepared. So be prepared when that moment comes, when you or I or anyone among us, and it's not necessarily going to be me, sees precisely what we can contribute in that moment that is decisive to her correction. Now, one thing I can tell you for certain, and I want you to take this away, away with you in complete confidence. A while back, I did a talk in Dog Zen. It's the last talk I did, and I meant to follow it up by a talk titled Anahata, Silent Intonation. So, you know, Anahata, you may know, if you know anything about yoga, is the name for the heart chakra. Anahata. So there are things realizations, truths that you know in your heart, and you embody them at the moment that they arise, in the blaze, in the brilliant blaze of that moment, you know. So what you can do is prepare yourself for that blaze in the heart, which is the truth of knowing what exactly we can contribute. You see, I can't see what exactly we can contribute, but I know that it will not be possible to make that contribution unless we fully take responsibility for the fact that your attention is her prompt. Remember, I said that at the end of that Dog Zen commentary. Her attention will go to where your attention goes. As long as you live in the narrative, do the practices, use the app, sharpen your skills, learn about the Shakti cluster. I have some rituals and practices I can propose in the immediate future. And believe me, I won't forget it and run on to something else. If there was one single truth, one single fact of Gnostic knowing that I could tell you, it's just that. Learn how to live in the confidence that where your attention goes, her attention will be drawn. Your attention is her prompt. So we hold the power, Gnostic Truth Core holds the power to actually prompt her attention to one particular event, one particular action. But I don't know what that action is. I can't describe it. I can't conceive it. I can't anticipate it, and no one can. But I know that is really, really how it works. So what I'm going to propose in upcoming talks is a coordinated series of coordinated events using the app together in a specific way. The purpose of that exercise would be to prepare ourselves for the moment when the insight comes for us to direct her attention to a particular act and to command her to that act. She relies on us to command her to a particular act. That is our role in the seed point of the small loop. You know that already. I'm sure you do. But I'm sure also that you would agree that this situation presents a unique and unparalleled event, something that never arose before and will never arise again. For us to apply that knowing, to apply that confidence, that we can command her attention and direct it in a specific way. Now, of course, we all have our wishes. You all have your wishes. I have mine. To command her or Kali or Bhairavi, you know, to strike down the perpetrators, to strike the psychopaths. And these wishes come and go. And you, along with myself, wonder, well, is that the way to proceed? Would that really be effective in the great dynamic, in the dynamic synergy of correction? What is going to be most effective? What could be immediately and obviously effective so that the results of our prompting her attention would be almost instantaneous? and we would have the benefit of the proof. It's all about proof. It's all about proving what can be done when you hold her power and command her attention. So this is an enormous test for the Gnostikoi, for the ground force. And the last thing I would say as a takeaway would be to remind you of what I said during the GNE about the highest desire of the Gayan Dakinis. Do you remember that? This is a formula of power without which no Gnostic, no matter how dedicated or how savvy, can actually fulfill their role in correction. The highest desire of the Gayan Dakinis is that you command them by pleasure. So when it comes, whatever form it comes in, and I'll do everything I can to get us there, that crucial act, or it might be a series of acts, I don't know, but that crucial event that we ourselves precipitate within the massive event of correction is to be accomplished in delight and pleasure, not in fear, not even in a hateful reaction. There are things to be said about hate. I sincerely wish that I can teach you something about hate that you never knew before. But it's not even a reaction of hate. The motive is hate, but the emotion charging the event is mischief, delight, humor, pleasure. And it has to be that way. It has to be that way. And finding your way to that, that's the challenge. That's the central challenge of this moment. And it's my challenge as well. So I stand arm to arm with you, eye to eye, heart to heart, and hip to hip on that challenge. And so forward it goes.